Good day, dear listener, and welcome to The Vagabond Dilemma, hosted by the lovely Rudy and, well, me, Henry. On this week's episode, we will continue discussing the ever-thrilling Boss Fruit saga, as well as declare our love and respect for women in general. We'll also head into the Utah desert to ponder on the supernatural and some mysterious 1930s American poetry. So let's get into it, and please enjoy.
Hello again to this episode that we're definitely filming on another week, and a lot of time has passed since the last episode.
Hi. It's so crazy to age a week.
Yeah, honestly. Well, this week... Oh, yeah, we should probably introduce... Wait. We have to reintroduce everything every time, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Welcome to The Vagabond Dilemma, which is a podcast where we, me, Rudy, and my beloved other host, Henry, will talk about famous lost explorers that might or might not have a resolution in their credits. So,
that's right.
And yeah, and if they don't, or actually no, the host as a host won't tell the resolution until the very end, so it's our time and duty to make up a dilemma or a resolution on our own. And who's to say, maybe we'll debunk a mystery of the world.
Exactly. And I just want to say, hell, if you want to be on this podcast, just go die as an explorer and you'll be right there with us.
But just let us know somewhere. We're going to drop our social media later in the podcast. Let us know through it that you're about to do it. We'll be on it.
Yeah.
If anything, we'll take notes. But leave it up for mystery, all right? Don't tell us how or why or
yeah. You could write your own mission cliffhanger. Isn't that fucking awesome?
It actually kind of would be.
I don't know.
Say that.
The last place I was seen was on top of a skyscraper in New York. Until I mysteriously disappeared.
Ooh. We should do that for the spooky season. An intro jingle with the woo.
Oh boy. A Halloween special.
Well, Henry, how are you?
How am I? I'm quite fabulous indeed. I just had a nice coffee I enjoyed.
Yeah, I finished my tea and I'm like, whoo, pumping!
Is this episode 2 of the Boss Fruit
podcast? No, I already
finished
the Boss Fruit podcast. So
all right.
By the next podcast episode, it might be a different mix.
Oh, do you have anything in mind already?
Actually...
Tea-wise?
I really do like forest fruits and berries, but as I recently found that Boss Fruit just translates to forest fruits, I want something more specific.
Something more specific. So like one specific type of berry.
Yeah, I like...
Or a specific type of berry mix.
I just want to become the tea person, you know? I want to know my tea, is what I'm saying.
That's fun. I like that. I kind of feel the same way about stuff like that as well sometimes. I kind of would like to be like more knowledgeable in coffee as well.
There you go. So that's a hobby we're going to pick up.
Yeah, it already feels more nuanced that I can taste certain undertone. Maybe it's just that I was
Same.
Drinking the coffee equivalent of actual garbage before. But the coffee I have now has like a subtle chocolatey undertone. And it smells really nice. I don't know, it just really heightened my coffee experience, I guess. Mm-hmm. When you have something like that. That's just adds a little nuance to the whole thing,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. That's nice. That's nice. I mean, you—that's almost an artistry, right?
What, like coffee making?
Coffee making, exploring coffee tastes, enjoying coffee—that's
yeah.
all expression of the soul. Which actually, funnily enough, brings us to our today's explorer.
Interesting. I like
Very
this segment.
Interesting. But let me pitch at first the environment, the era in which we are in.
Okay.
I'm going to add later on this, like, editor, please add all the, you know, the noises of that era as I'm about to describe. This is going to be the podcast of the year. We're going to win Grammy awards after this.
Way to set impossible standards to reach, but all right. Let's hear
maybe
it.
Maybe we won't. Let's see. Anyways, so it's the start of the 20th century. And guess where? America.
Well, you didn't even let me guess. That's fucked up.
Wait. The quiz is coming later. Don't worry.
Can I guess where it was? I think it was America.
Wow, Henry. Holy
Thank you.
Jesus.
Thank you.
Then again, I'm going to be honest. In that day and era, there's only two places where we could have gotten stories from. It's either Britain or America. Like, let's be honest, right? Because that's the era of, well, on international stage, America's flexing its economic and political muscles. The sinking of Titanic happened. World War One is around the corner. Well, they didn't know that, but... And also, there's a quiz for you. I actually also went down a little rabbit hole. And Do you know what the annual average income for a family was back then in the USA? Like, equivalent of the nowadays US dollars.
Yeah, so adjusted for inflation.
Yeah, yeah.
For the average American?
Yeah, for an average family.
Huh. I want to say... An average family, so the entire family household.
Yeah, well, I would assume
this is
that
including child labor, or not.
Actually, I think maybe they just assumed the parents here, but they should assume the kids because they were earning something, right?
Yeah, it depends. You know, the rich ones.
Okay, let's say the parents. I think this is for the parents.
All right. Yeah. Sorry, I should have diluted this question so much. I want to say, stuff was cheaper than even in equivalency. So I want to say $60,000.
Funnily enough, I also thought of the same lines initially, like 50 or something like that. Because nowadays it's above 100, right, or something like that. It's actually pretty high for your average standard.
Is that the average is 100,000.
No, it's not the average, but like.
But like middle class.
I actually don't know what. But anyways, okay, the actual one is only 3,000.
Huh.
Only 3,000 US dollars.
I guess stuff really was a lot cheaper back then, huh? Or maybe there were just a lot more poor people than rich people.
I think this is before the actual, you know, the economy boom that they had.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you also have to take in mind that, oh, by the way, this statistics was taken, like, literally on the cusp of the 20th century, so 1900.
Okay.
Families still have no indoor plumbing, usually. No phone, no car.
Oh, right.
And teens also are working in factories.
Ha ha ha. Yeah, that
another
suck.
Fun fact for America is in the span of 15 years, from 1900 to 1915, they had 15 million immigrants. That's about equal to the number of last 40 years combined. Like, on the last, like before the last 40 years.
What was their total population at that point? Do you know that?
No, I did not look that up.
That is pretty... I think that was still indeed... America was like the place to make a new home for yourself, you know? I think a lot of families...
Definitely.
Yeah, but that's pretty cool. That was in the middle of that era, huh? Kind of a side note. Do you think that... Or could you, at this point, imagine growing up without a phone and without internet?
Without a phone or internet? Honestly, no. I don't think anyone can actually imagine how it would be. Unless, actually, I'm pretty sure I would know somebody who could. Because, a lot of people where I grew up, right? Still people live in the countryside and stuff like that. Like, we hear about those stories all the time. And they are still people who, like, you know, grow up without the... big technology, like they have a TV and they have electricity, but like technology doesn't influence them as much as it does in the cities. So
yeah, that's fair.
I guess
enough.
It's I can go close to it, but I'm still a labor child of the modern era.
Yeah, I mean same. When I was traveling last month, I was really using Google Maps a lot, and at some point I thought, God damn, if this didn't work, I would be completely lost.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, I have no idea what to do. I also, my mom traveled a lot when she was young, and this is like the 1980s. Mm-hmm. And she told me a story once of that they were in China, and they had one English map, and they had to make do with that. And nobody spoke English there at that point, so I don't know.
That's a story of perseverance.
Sorry to make this such a tangent, by the way. But
go on.
I think it's a pretty interesting concept maybe to do nowadays. Just go traveling without a phone. Just do it like old school, let's say, just with maps and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, as a travel enthusiast, that might be an interesting thing to do once.
Definitely. I mean, I will say that if it's a city, I most probably, without phone working, I would find my way back. Because I am, directionally wise, quite good when it comes to cities. Because most of the cities, except maybe some old European ones, are built logically. Like, if you know at least the way you came from, in a sense of like the direction, you would get back. My mom wouldn't. Yeah. She's like, oh my god. She gets lost going around the corner.
No, I agree. I think in that regard, I also would find my way back. It's more the finding your way to a new destination.
Oh, that would be a bit more iffy, especially if it's a foreign land which does not know English as second language.
Yeah. But okay, back to America.
Right, well, yeah, so of course this is also the time of the progressive era, right? So a lot of ideologies thrown around, a lot of art blooming, women right to vote, ongoing battles such as that. A lot of stuff. A lot of stuff we nowadays support, and we are proud that we have that, right?
Yeah, can I just say, in the name of the podcast, we love women.
We do indeed. We should how do I say this? We should devote this episode to women's rights.
Exactly. Hey, if you're a woman, give me a call.
Yes. Do give him a call. And he'll be like, I support you.
Right. Yeah, all right. This episode is dedicated to women's rights.
Yes. Well, anyways, in the midst of all this soup of progressive and economic bloom, there's a certain lad who I actually never heard of before, but apparently, as I learned this morning, like, the dude's actually pretty famous. He has books and actually grant nowadays for him.
What's a grant? Sorry?
A grant of, like, a money fund.
Oh, yeah, okay. Understood. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So, anyways. March 28th, 1914, Oakland, California. A certain boy is born, later named Everett Russ. I think that's how he pronounced the surname, because I think it's a derivative of a French surname. The way you spell it is R-U-E-S and another S, so I think it's Russ.
Russ, I don't know, you're probably right, let's just call him Everett Russ.
He's the younger of the two sons of Stella and Christopher. Russ's older brother named Waldo.
It's unfortunate that he wasn't the explorer.
Since early days, Everett was very, he was prone to kind of, he was an artistic person. He used to write poems or verses, he used to travel a lot because his dad was a Unitarian minister, and that it's something to do with religion. He had to move a lot, basically.
Right.
And guess the age at what he allegedly started writing at.
He said he wrote poems a lot, right?
Yeah, I think he started with, like, verses, but...
I'm gonna go with age 7.
Okay, that is actually pretty insane, but no, it's actually 12, so... Not that impressive, right. I guess, when you said 7. Yeah.
Bye, Everett, dumbass.
But yeah, so he was born in 1914. By 1930, he already had moved to Los Angeles. And he started his most famous travels in 1931, where he didn't travel as Americans in these days would, to some exotic lands or like Hawaii or something like that. You know, no. Everett loved his country. So he went to Arizona, New Mexico, Utah, and Colorado.
Well, some people love garbage, I guess.
Well, I mean, he is one of the... I might be wrong on this, I didn't quite get it. But he might be one of the founding reasons of parks like Sequoia and Yosemite National Parks, because he explored those locations a lot and wrote about them. The High Sierra, and that all happened in the summers of 1930 and 1933.
Okay, fair
but
enough.
But his most ambitious and most mysterious, might I tease, of the journeys started in November 12th in 1934. Actually, it's quite disputed because Wikipedia says it's November 20th, but other sources sometimes list November 12th. So I'm actually going to say November 12th because Wikipedia has been known to not be the most reliable source.
Okay. Wait, is this the big mission that he
Yeah, that's the big mission. And
so well, can I ask?
Yeah.
Then how the fuck did he get famous?
Oh, he got famous because of this mission.
Oh, okay.
His works, I allegedly, like, he was, you know, an average known writer, I must say, when he was, before his mission. Like, people knew of his name, but he wasn't like, you know, Stephen Hawking, basically, right?
Right.
But this mission made him quite famous.
Really weird comparison, but all right.
And guess where he set out? It's one of the locations that I already named, but we'll guess.
I mean, I think I unfortunately saw this already when I was reading the explorer list we have, but it was Utah, wasn't it?
Yes, it was Utah. Imagine the most ambitious journey to Utah desert. I mean, I learned to respect this man after I heard more of his story, but and nevertheless, Utah desert with two donkeys only.
Damn.
Never to be seen again.
No. So he was completely alone?
Yeah, well, with two donkeys, but yes.
All right, well, let's not say these donkeys could tell the direction, so I'm going to stamp that as completely alone.
Yeah, and he was quite the quite adventurous person in a sense that he literally told his parents, apparently, that you would be unable to reach me for 2 months because I'm, you know, in the wilds. So
and he was right.
Yeah, so I basically was like, I'm fucking off without any way of you actually, you know, reaching out for me.
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, so after 3 months of hearing me say that, no letters came, no nothing, and of course parents grow quite worried because apparently he used to do this a lot, but he was also kind of on the dot with his predictions. So when he said you will be unable to reach me for 3 weeks, after 3 weeks he did actually write a letter.
Oh, yeah.
So after 3 months, of course, his parents are like worried, so they call on the locals. There was some weird mix-up between the letters. Apparently the parents didn't call on this specific person that I'm going to name, but the person is married to somebody who works in the post, so he saw the letter and made a search party. But this person in question is so parents, so okay, the story goes, the parents write to Escalante, Utah on February of 1935, and the commissioner of Garfield County, H. Jennings Allen, forms a search party, and that's the person I just named who just saw the letter. He wasn't really particularly involved with the person anyways.
Okay.
And yeah, and say, you know, they form a search party, and as the name is quite known, the search party apparently is quite a search party. It wasn't just like one dude going around the field just looking for somebody. It was, you know, they lit up torches with signals for if ever he is there, find his way back home.
Yeah, and, they put the party in search party.
Yes, basically. Literally vibing in Utah desert. And allegedly there was a shepherd who reported seeing Roos on November 19th near the treacherous intersection of Escalante Creek and the Colorado River.
Okay.
And yeah, so I'm not gonna tell exactly everything of what they found. Actually, no, because the resolution is already a mystery, so I'm actually gonna say. So guess what they found, and I'm gonna later say where they found it.
So this was of him. They found something.
Yes, they found of him. It's okay. I'm gonna say it's not an item.
It's not an item. That's really mysterious then.
Yeah,
it's not an item. Mysterious. His fucking right leg then.
Oh my god. No. Okay, so first of all, our homie survived. They found the donkeys.
Okay, that was actually going to be my second
honestly,
guess.
Honestly, which is a mystery to me because then he gets, for now as you know, lost, right? But yeah. He doesn't take the donkeys with him?
I mean, maybe he was trying to cross a certain river.
Okay, the donkeys were not found allegedly at the spot where the other things were found later on. Donkeys were found near the north side of Davis Gulch, which is, on the north of the said location before.
Okay.
Which, I mean, they allegedly just, you know, migrated there.
Right.
an only sign of ruse later on was that they found a coral at the campsite, which is, well, you know, like a handmade, basically, how do I say this? Where you keep the animals in, like a fence from
tent? Oh, yeah, okay.
Like that kind of thing. So, he made whole effort for the donkeys as to still somehow migrate it later on.
Right.
And the most mysterious part of all this, they found an inscription at the campsite with the words Nemo 1934. So the only inscription says is Nemo 1934.
Okay.
Later searches in late May and June 1935 include an aerial survey covering the ground from Lee's Ferry to Escalante, and they, you know, like, that's already an extensive search at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Also including a ground search once again with 9 horseback riders, and a quite bittersweet fact that Mother never gave up, because this was the one I named now was the last big search of him, but his mother never really gave up the search, went to Utah several times until she died in 1964.
That's sweet.
That is
sweet. Well, it's kind of sad, but it's also
sweet. And that's sweet. Everything I'm going to give you for now.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so what do you think happened to this mysterious writer and artist? Oh, I also should mention that he was quite he loved to live it on the edge, because the way he was basically supporting his own journeys was one part of, like, parents' money. Second mm-hmm. part, he used to, like, do a little bit of painting, a little bit of drawing, and he used to sell those for food whilst on the journey. And several sources did list that it didn't go well at all times.
Oh, so you're suggesting that he might have gotten in a scuffle?
No, in a sense of, like, sometimes people just wouldn't buy his art. So he was he wasn't, like, you know, just average white boy, always, like, grown accustomed to having, you know, food 3 times a day and going on a journey. He was accustomed to sometimes, you know, living a day or two without food or something.
Right. Okay, I have a couple of ideas. I want to start off with Nemo 1935. That's a false flag. That was him just trying to write another poem to hopefully get another sandwich. But I think, okay, my favorite theory that I can think of right now is, so what was the landscape again? It was just a desert, generally?
It was a Utah desert, but I looked up the pictures. The desert including, like, canyons and ravines, something like that.
Canyons, okay. So one day he was traversing the canyons with his donkeys. Yeah. And who did he meet? Well, a witch. So, I don't know. Maybe she tried to, like, trick him or do, like, one of those bargains where it turns out it was bad all along. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's hard to describe. And what happened is, actually, here's something. The witch challenged. Oh God! I shouldn't say this without knowing anything about this person. But the witch challenged him to write a good poem, and he couldn't.
My God!
Yeah, I hate to hear it. Truly, that's the Nemo 1935 angle. And then, what happened next is, as punishment, the witch turned him into a donkey.
Oh, he's one of the donkeys?
Exactly. Left to roam the lands of Utah as the poor creatures he dragged along. And then he got turned into a donkey, joined his fellow donkeys, and tried to make his way back, talk to the search party, but they all just thought he was, well,
a donkey.
Exactly what he looked like.
So maybe a donkey, he actually was, like, he did get back to civilization after the search party found the donkeys, because they probably brought them home. But nobody knew it was him.
Yes, exactly. And there was no way to turn
maybe
him back.
Maybe he's the base material. Because nobody even knew. Somebody maybe did know, and maybe he's the base material for the Shrek donkey.
Just a silly donkey. They're like, what? This donkey is so funny. Somebody should write a story about this.
But let's not make him the main character because of the witch's curse.
Let's make him a side character. This Oki is so funny, somebody should make him a fucking side character.
Yeah. Well, me, as smart as I am, as per usual, I know exactly what happened.
Uh-huh.
So let me tell you a theory.
Alright.
So it's Utah, right?
It
and
is.
Utah nowadays is also known for, I think it's in the south, they have like some forests, or it's somewhere around the area that it's known. Which we nowadays known, but later, like back then, he probably met the Foot.
The Foot.
The T-Man himself, the Squatch.
Oh, God.
Back then, he wasn't known as Bigfoot, or Yeti, or Sasquatch, because he didn't earn this title yet.
Yeah, you want to hit us with the all-foot theory again? You sick fuck.
Oh, yeah, my theory of all foots, but the Bigfoots only prevailed because they had the bigger foots and they stomped all the other foots. Actually, I owe this theory to the Italians. This theory was actually developed by an Italian man that I know. Not gonna drop his name, but I'm just gonna say that his name starts with a V and ends with Alerio.
Shout out to Italy.
Shout out to Italy for my Bigfoot theory. But yeah, so he met the Mr. Foot, and Mr. Foot was like, "Yo, who the fuck are you doing in my desert, right?"
Like, actually talking, or this is gesturing at this point?
He was like, "Okay, I'm gonna try to get the angle. Who are you in my desert?"
That's what you think Bigfoot sounds like?
Well, I was known back as the Foot back then, but later I became the Bigfoot, you know?
That's when he went through an image change and changed his
puberty
voice accordingly.
Puberty hit different, you know? But anyways, okay. Mr. Voss, what are you doing here? And he was like, "Oh, well, you know, I'm just writing a book I'm wandering about." This is not the voice I intended for him, but this
they
is the
sound
one we
very
stick for.
Similar.
Yeah, kind of.
This Bigfoot character might have been a...
Yeah, and
his
Bigfoot
son.
Actually was like, "Wait, what the I already forgot the voice I was doing." So anyways, Bigfoot gets angry. He's like, "Yo, it's my porch. What are you doing writing a book? I'm living here in a solitude, right? So like, I don't want anyone knowing this. This is my land." And then Ross is like, "Yo, no, you are literally a Nemo, because Nemo in Greek means nobody. You get it?
Okay.
Yeah, so he's like, "Yo, I'm going to write a book about like a hairy man living in the desert. And I'm going to like, because it's 1934, I'm going to name it Nemo 1934. And it's going to be a book about a nobody like you living in a desert. And I'm going to like, you know, as a white man probably, I'm going to take your land and take your home." And Mr. Foot, that was his first kill. Mr. Foot, that's where the Bigfoot was actually basically born.
That's where the blood hunger started.
Exactly. Everett Russ is why we now know the urban legend of Bigfoot and its hunting forests. Because he was like, you know, maybe he was... Foot was probably smart. He was like, "Yo, this man found my desert, so I guess I should migrate, right? And I'm just going to migrate to forests."
Not to another desert? Well, that's to throw him off. Interesting. A forest, huh? Is there like any known or theorized location of Bigfoot? Was that around Utah, or is this just?
I mean, there's multiple. There's, I mean, okay, depends on where we talk about, but in Americas, I think it's somewhere around there. Because that's the land. I mean, probably Alaska too, because you know it's snowy in forests.
Yeah, he must have walked fast for that one.
At least American Bigfoot's criteria, as far as I gathered, is you have to have a big forest and, like, loads of it. That's it. So wherever that is, that's where Bigfoot is.
That's where Bigfoot's hanging out. Well, I hope he was able to acclimatize to the vastly different climates of Alaska and Utah. That sounds like a rough one, not gonna lie.
That's how he grew the foot. Maybe Foot was actually just a big man walking around and just went into that. Because, you know, evolution progresses. But maybe that's how humanity degressed into Bigfoot.
Just because it was a little cold outside and he didn't have clothes. Oh, that's a theory. Everett turned into Bigfoot.
Wait a minute.
I thought that's what you just said.
That could... No, maybe I said that Foot maybe ate Everett, but...
Oh.
But if he turned into Bigfoot... But then it was like... There must have been... He must have found another Bigfoot, because he can't be the same Bigfoot running around, right?
I mean, is like Bigfoot theorized to be, like, this kind of immortal-ish being?
Well, then how did he find the immortal... Oh, he found the witch in the middle of the desert... And she cursed him to be the Bigfoot.
Well.
Also, it's the desert of Utah. Aliens might have also been part of it. I don't know.
Actually, that's... When was the first UFO sighting? Like... I guess it's hard to document because people just say dumb shit all the time.
Well, if you listen to conspiracy theory history channels, then around the time of ancient Egyptians...
Really?
Yeah, because apparently they built the pyramids, allegedly.
Oh.
Oh.
What a boring theory. Can we give some Egyptians a little bit of credit, you know? They tried their best and now they just get this, alright, it's built it. That's kind of unfair, you know?
It is unfair.
And you know what? I'm not going to credit aliens for writing Nemo 1935 or 1934 either. That was all Everett. But he didn't do such a good job if he didn't even write more than the title.
Well, allegedly people just say that the inscription was due to his favorite book being the, 2000 Year Under the Sea? You know, the Jules Verne one.
Yeah, I know the name.
Yeah, and I think the captain of the submarine in that book is named Nemo.
Yikes, Everest. Could have done a little bit better there, King.
Cringe. Get ratioed.
What a dumbass, bro.
Get cancelled on Twitter.
What else is there? In a canyon, right? A canyon desert?
Yes.
Oh. Let's see. There was a river?
Yes, there was a river.
How big is the Colorado River?
We should look it up. Let's look it up. Pulling Google Maps right now. Where is my mouse?
It's a good question.
Not in the Colorado River.
So it's not that big, at least.
Yeah. Okay, but I can... Wait. So... He got lost around... At least that's where they found the... That's where he was last seen. Treacherous intersection of Escalante Creek and the Colorado River. Where is Escalante Creek?
I mean, I do have to say, it is pretty mysterious if you get lost in a desert and you can't get found. Maybe it's just that their searching standards weren't up to modern, but...
But they went on an aerial search, too.
Yeah, but even then, like, it's still, like, 1930s, so their equipment will be kind of trash. I don't know. Either their equipment just wasn't that great, you know, I can believe that.
This is quite a mountainous desert.
Oh. Maybe he was going for... You know what? Never mind.
What?
I don't want to do a callback.
Do a callback right now.
I would say maybe he was going for the full Explorer's Grand Slam.
Oh, maybe he was. Maybe he was adding some of the peaks and then he was like, oh, I slipped. And he died.
I think the most probable... actual answer, after the witch theory, of course, is that he went for a nice little swim. Did he take his donkeys? Yeah, fuck it. Let's say his donkeys were there. This is what was happening. Mm. So, he went for a swim, you know, refreshment. Yeah. Yeah. The desert is, well, hot. So... He went for a swim, his donkeys were there, he tied himself to his donkey so he could make sure he could get back. But the donkey was like, you know what, I've had enough of this bullshit. Untied himself with his hooves, because, well, he learned a lot. And then it was like, well, shit, I guess I'll die now. And then he just got, well, drowned in the river, maybe hit his head on a rock
or something. Maybe the donkey just hated him and just like was like, yo, die, you... Man, and pushed him in the river.
Yeah, maybe that as well. And then he unfortunately drowned, and the donkeys returned like,
I don't know where he is.
The last thing he heard in his living life was,
You truly, you hate to hear it. I wouldn't want to be killed by a donkey. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, they're kind of cute animals, though. I would never even try to hurt a donkey. They're so cute.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. But if they approached me, I would tell them. I would firmly tell them to fuck off. I don't know. Aren't donkeys mildly aggressive?
I don't know, actually. I think every animal is mildly aggressive if you approach it the wrong way.
But I think donkeys are like rude horses.
Really? I thought they're sad horses.
I don't know. I don't know if what I'm saying is true. But that's the impression I have of them.
Well, then what are zebras?
I don't know.
Royal horses?
Royal horses? I guess.
Because allegedly they're just a horse, but differently colored, right?
Is that true? Or
I think
this
so.
Is what you're saying? But don't they look different from horses?
No, I think I've seen comparison of pictures of, like, zebra without, like, the coloring. Literally just looks like a horse. Like, you know, a specific breed, of, but still a horse.
Alright, are zebra horses? Zebra are closely related to horse, but they're not the same species. So I guess they're a horse type. I mean, okay, I'm definitely on board with horse type character. I mean, animal. So, yeah, I don't know.
Well, anyways, do you want to hear the ending of this mystery?
Well, yes, let's hear the ending of Everett's story.
Right. Well, the ending is actually not that simple. Because, till 2009, everybody just assumed a lot of things of his mysterious death, most common of which was, well, that floods took him, because that area was known for its, like, very sudden flooding at times. So, that was, like, or a rockfall or something like that, right?
Yeah.
But then, at 2009, so quite recently, mm-hmm. discovery of a great site on Calm Ridge near town of Bluff, Utah, shook the world, because an elderly Navajo claimed that Roos was murdered by two Ute Native Americans who wanted his donkeys.
Then they kind of fucked up, huh?
Yeah, but the thing is, like, Roos was always, like, he learned a lot of things throughout his life. One of which was to kind of, let's say, vibe with the, like, Navajo culture. I really hope I'm not mispronouncing that name.
That's
basically a language, right? And he knew how to speak it.
Right.
So anyways, and then through so University of Colorado engaged on a DNA test on the specific remains of a human, and at first they found positive answers. So literally you can find articles to this day that shook the world, being like, yo, this man who everybody knows, actually, like, we found him, he's not, you know, lost anymore. But
right.
Then University of Colorado ate shit, because later on it was found that the DNA test was faulty and those were not the remains of Everett Ross. And and they were actually proven to be, like, it's not that they were just like, it might or might not be. No, they're literally not. The funny story about this, that in reality they found a missing Native American named Joey Santistevan and contacted the family in March 2010. So they actually found another missing person who they identified and told this family that that's him.
Huh. Well, I guess it's one mystery solved.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't try to solve it, but they solved that one. And the mysterious ending of this is that till this day, nobody really knows what happened, but certain friends have come forward of Roos at the time and said that he was always kind of a wanderer, and one of his things that he wrote somewhere apparently was, well, quoting Roos himself, "I shall always be a lone wanderer of the wilderness. I'll never stop wandering. And when the time comes to die, I'll find the wildest, loneliest, most desolate spot there is." And now we know he did.
So is that, does that mean he killed himself?
Well, nobody knows, because nobody actually found his remains, but he apparently allegedly wrote this down, like, this is a written statement of his.
Huh.
Still leaves up for mystery the Nemo 1934, because nobody, like, people, he apparently used to do that. This wasn't the only spot where he inscribed this.
Oh, maybe it was just that he liked the thingy then, yeah, I guess. Maybe that was like a waypoint for himself.
Maybe. But wasn't Nemo literally just his favorite book character then?
I guess. Hmm. I mean, I don't ever, what I don't really know what else it could be. If it's a pretty solid connection, yeah. I have to say.
Well, anyways, he is a well-acclaimed novelist in a sense of, well, he's a writer. People know of him. People love him. He has, as far as I know, a grant, and there's been movies about him. People have tried to still this day find him. And yeah, he's kind of becoming an urban legend in the crowds of those who wonder about mysteries such as this.
Yeah. Little known fact, Mount Everest was named after him.
Factual, completely factual. Tell it this to your history teacher, she'll be shooketh.
Exactly. I would never lie. That's all you have to know.
Exactly.
Alright, well, that was quite interesting.
Yeah, actually, like, I'm gonna be honest. When I first, like, started, like, I literally just know the name of this man as, like, he's a person on the list who missed, like, who's missing, right? Like, Wikipedia list, basically. And I was like, okay, so let's pick him and let's see. And then I was like, oh, dude, this person's known.
I don't know, I think the false flag ending was also pretty interesting.
Yeah,
it's
kind of a, because like usually it's interesting because usually when mysteries like these happen, like they just stop at the first discovery. Like a lot of people probably, you know, thought, you know, we found him and that's it. Like why would she be investigating more? But somebody did, and they're like, yo, this is not him.
Yeah, it's good that they did. I mean, it's good to verify your claims, you know.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that the University of Colorado actually verified. I think University of Colorado ate shit because they carried out the DNA test and they stopped, like, they didn't... Somebody else verified that it's not him.
Right. So, maybe University of Colorado were trying to make a cheeky headline.
They did. It was all over the world news.
Exactly. But, like, That's what they were going for, not that they actually made a mistake. Maybe this is the real conspiracy.
I mean, they're Americans, you know? They would do anything for press.
Yeah. And with that, American slander.
I guess that's it. Everything is right in the world, and we can end this show.
Exactly.
Well, then.
So.
Thank you, listeners, for listening.
Mm-hmm.
Please. Thank you. Recommend this to your friends, share it on social media. I will again drop my Insta, which is 000RUDYS000. So 3 zeros, Rude is 3 zeros. Please drop a follow. We will, maybe when this comes out, already have a Twitter made by our beloved Henry.
Let's see.
Where you can drop your suggestions, huh?
That's not a bad idea.
Don't forget to get lost and go missing so we can continue this podcast after we reach the point where there are no missing explorers anymore.
Go out there and kill yourselves, people. That's the message we're putting in the world. Go get him, champ.
Oh my god.
Sorry. Maybe I should take that back. Actually, don't, because then we lose listenership, all right?
Oh yeah, just kidding, don't, everybody. Yeah. Actually, we do lose listeners, and we like probably the climb will be like 1,000, but until we reach 1,000, we kind of have to preserve the 5.
Exactly. So delay your death for now.
See how we do, and then decide.
Exactly.
How dare you go and get lost just because you want it? At least be useful when you do.
All right. Well, thank you for listening then, and have a nice day, I guess. I don't know.
Depending on the day, depending when you're listening to this. Have a nice whatever comes after this.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.